Emilio's never forgiven John Kerry for marrying Teresa Hines.
I thought he'd never forgive them for saying John Kerry for reporting for duty. And then losing. You were following the 2004 election pretty closely, right, Emilio, as a child in Puerto Rico?
You were really concerned about the Swift Boat veterans for truth.
Yeah, fucking Swift Boat captain.
I think I have vague memories of John Kerry. Of just like,
sure, you were alive.
I was six, seven. Yeah. I guess I was seven.
I was in fourth grade.
Sure.
Sorry, go ahead.
Did he have like big eyebrows?
He had sort of a tall head.
Right, and he's got like the chin. Like he's almost a Jay Leno
he's
chin.
He sort of is like a stretched Jay Leno for sure.
Right.
He's got a big forehead.
Yeah.
I do remember I was living in Alabama, and I remember a bunch of kids being very anti John Kerry.
Sure, that would be.
And I was just like,
that would be the vibe. yeah, I mean, that was 2004. Was like I was coming into high school,
very politically active.
Yes, I was actually involved in a. My school was chosen to have a committee or whatever come up with a PSA for the national mock election. And I, like, whoa, worked on and, like, appeared in this, like, public service announcement about, like, young people participating in the national mock election. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Get educated. Start voting now. There's, like, a chant.
Whoa.
Welcome to Can I Kick It? This is a podcast about film festivals. My name is Emilio Diaz. Joining me today is
Andy Gramuga.
Number one food stand, Colin Edgley.
I can feel it coming. I can feel the stand coming back alive.
Well, you know, when you have love, you gotta break it out. Yeah, today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about food movies. We're going to be talking about recent release, The Taste of Things.
Yes.
The Pot of Food.
Not the title you saw the film under, Emilio.
No.
But
I saw it as the Passion of Dodin Buffon.
Right.
We'll talk titles. We're also going to be talking about 1987's Babette's Feast. And before that, you know, there were some additions to the Cannes lineup, and I feel like we should talk through some of them. We have Director's Fortnite announcements. We have additions to the actual competition lineup. I feel like there was maybe one more announcement.
And Critics Week also announced, but there was like,
yeah,
it's like a bunch of movies you've never heard of.
Yes. So what are the movies that got announced for as part of the lineup? What are the additions? I know we have a friendly face in there.
Sure, yeah. So in competition, right, we have the biggest name is Michel Hazanavicius, who I was just thinking about. I was like, oh yeah, that guy directed The Artist, and then no one ever talked about him ever again.
Well, I feel like he gets talked about only in, like, this guy won, like, Best Director and Best Picture, and he only makes, like, dog-ass movies. What happened with... I still have never seen The Artist, and...
Sure. No one has seen The Artist since that year. Like, why would anyone watch The Artist in 2024? There's no reason to.
I may have told this story before... but very briefly, I have the only memory I have of The Artist, really, other than it's like, you know, I remember it being, everyone loved Uggy, everyone was hot on it in the Oscars, but I can't remember which movie I saw, but it was like my mother and my brother went and saw The Artist, and I went and saw something else because I was like, I don't want to see The Artist. That looks bad. And we get out of the theater, and I was like, was it funny? Because everyone had been talking about, like, oh, it's so funny. And my mom goes, yeah, until he tried to kill himself. And then I was just like, my brother was like, "Death, you ruined the movie." I was like, oh, okay.
And so you're like, now I never have to see this because I know he tries to
kill himself. Well, at that point, I was like, I guess I won't watch it. And now I'm like, I got to see why this guy tries to kill himself.
Yeah.
I got to see him say with pleasure at the end.
Yeah, that's true. He does say with pleasure at the end. It's really, it's crazy. He's hot. He talks. So this is an animated film. The Most Precious of Cargos. And it's about the fate of a baby boy who is thrown from an Auschwitz-bound train by his French-Jewish father as it crosses a Polish forest and is found by a childless woodcutter's wife.
Whoa.
So.
Thank you, Michel.
Yeah. I guess, right, animated films are, like, have an interesting place in the history of Cannes competition lineup. They don't do them very often, you know, aside from the occasional Shrek film.
And Shrek 2?
Yes. That is a Shrek film,
Colin. Sure, yes, sorry.
And then, you know, they've had a few others, but it certainly is not a every year they're looking for an animated film to have sort of thing. And it seems like this is probably just more because it's one of their guys who made an animated film.
They get the French check a box.
Yeah, that's right. That's the right. Their
quota.
Yeah, French stuff. Also, we have Mohamed Rasoulof's The Seed of the Sacred Fig, who is a dissident Iranian director. And then Romanian director Emmanuel Parvu will make his competition debut with his third feature, 3 Kilometers to the End of the World, which is about a gay teenager trapped in a village where he is ostracized by everyone around him. So yeah, that's the competition. Anyone have anything to say about either of those two?
Nope. Not really. I guess Hazen Avicius, last time he was at Cannes was 2022, where he opened the festival with whatever.
The Dead Don't Die remake?
No, the last One Cut of the Dead.
Sorry, of course. Dead Don't Die is a completely different movie. Is that the fucking Vigo movie? What's Dead Don't Die?
Jarmusch?
Is that not the Jarmusch? Yeah.
Oh, is that the Jarmusch? Of course.
There is a Vigo with a title like that.
Don't Hurt or something
Yes,
like that?
Yes, that's what it is. Yep.
Yeah. What am I thinking? Of course it was the Jarmusch. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they also added a couple of other films and other...
Yes.
In other parts. In the Cannes premiere section, they are premiering a movie called Maria, which is about the life of Maria Schneider, who was the co-star of Last Tango in Paris. Obviously a tumultuous life, a tumultuous tale. Matt Dillon stars as Marlon Brando in it.
Whoa. Wait, who directed this?
Jessica Palud.
Is someone playing? I mean, is it there like... I feel like I remember hearing the Matt Dillon casting, and then I remember someone else that was like, whoa. Who's playing Maria Schneider?
Anna Maria Bartolome, who is the star of Happening, I guess.
Oh.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But, yeah. There's a couple more things, but...
Yeah, there's an Oliver Stone doc about Lula, the right-wing politician who was, like, in jail and then recently got, I might be conflating a few different things, but his former Brazilian president.
Yeah, former Brazilian president who wasn't... jail now. I think he is now the Brazilian president again. I think he also is the of the Workers' Party, so I think he's left wing. But yeah, that's interesting, I guess. You know, Oliver Stone be directing a documentary these days.
Yeah. About a political figure.
Yeah.
Remember when he interviewed Putin for Showtime? Crazy.
I do.
Showtime. Arnaud Desplechin.
Paramount Plus.
Arnaud Desplechin. He's, yep. He had a new movie. He be making films. Interesting that it is not in competition, but I guess that is not that,
Was, the one with Seydoux in comp? From, I think 2021?
I think Deception? So. Yeah. Yes? I want to say yes. I think that is, that was in competition. I think his last film was in competition, so this one is not. But, it doesn't seem like he's been having a great go of it in competition, so I guess this makes sense.
Sure, yeah. Relegated.
Yeah, that's about it. I guess Liu Ye, who's like a Chinese director of some note, also has a film and special screenings, but that's about it. We can move on to Director's Fortnite, which also announced the lineup.
Mm-hmm. The big one is Ephes.
There, yeah. There, that which is.
We're all excited for.
That is a one of the ones with more known names. I think, like last year's Director's Fortnite, it is maybe less starry than it used to be in terms of just like bringing on. I almost said B-tier American films, but that's like almost rude to them. I mean, like stuff that wouldn't quite hit competition, that level sure. of American film they would have there. And now they don't seem to be programming those kinds of movies. They are taking stuff that seems legitimately very small and indie, which Ephes seems to be one of yeah. them. Seems to be a very small production by people who, you know, are around the, you know, the sort of candy film industry, like
Frederick Wiseman's in it.
As yeah, a Frederick voice. Wiseman is in it.
There's a couple Keith of William it. Richards and Wayne Diamond, both from Uncut Gems, are in it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess they just liked Uncut Gems and figured that they would and be the in it.
Striking performers.
Yeah.
We all remember how Wayne Diamond says iPad.
I do not remember that.
He kind of says iPad.
Okay.
iPad. Yeah, the rest of it, I think there are a couple of other interesting names if you're more in these worlds. Like Matthew Rankin is a person who's directed films I've heard of.
Do we talk about one of his shorts?
I feel like we did, but I don't remember exactly which one right now. Yeah, that's about it. I think also for Director's Fortnite, they're doing a special screening of Chantal Ackerman's American Stories, Food, Family, and Philosophy. He saw that movie, wow. which we have seen on. We've talked about
it
on
like
this podcast.
Is it like a new restoration?
Do not know.
That's like one of the movies that we've done an episode on that I think about the most, maybe.
Sure. I famously sniped it from you on the best movies we've covered.
Of course.
Draft.
Of course. I forget we did that.
That was a real, how do we not have any homework this week?
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Anyway, should we get into the films now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about how we want to approach this. I know it's been a minute since the both of you have seen Taste of Things.
Yeah, it's been a couple, maybe a month or two. Amelia, it's been a full year? Not quite a full year.
Probably mid-May he saw it.
Right. That's so crazy that this time last year you were like gearing up to go to Cannes.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. And that's fun. What we're doing. We're having so much fun.
I am.
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Remember the full English talk? 15 minutes of cold open that we all get that's gonna stay in.
That's right.
An unbroken conversation.
Yeah. Is it my no edit week? Song. It's boy. Let's start with Taste of Things as the peg and the thing that we might rely on Colin a little bit to remind us of all the things that happened in it.
Sure.
So this is, it premiered at Cannes in competition last year. Did it win something?
It did, Best Director, right? Or the Grand Prix?
It won Best Director. Yeah.
Yes, because the Grand Prix was Zone of Interest, of course. Tran Anh Hung.
Yep. Tran Anh Hung.
Yes.
Director Vietnamese. Of Vietnamese descent, but I believe he has mostly...
Grew up in France, yeah.
Yeah, grew up in France and has worked in France.
Starring Juliette Binoche
and Benoît Magimel,
the former couple.
I know, former lovers.
Reuniting.
Which, there's a bit of a... You can tell. They get some good chemistry.
Sure, yeah.
I remember once... I was listening to an interview with Binoche and Tran Anh Hung where they were talking about the process. And I think it was like they developed the movie for a while and it was supposed to be an other actor. I don't think they named the actor. Mm-hmm. And then at the last moment, he dropped out. So they were just like, who can you just like have chemistry with instantly? And she was like, I can call Benoit. Let's see if we can make this happen.
Very cool.
Let's see if we can make this happen.
That's a very French vibe.
Yeah.
And
so this one, it was picked up by Sony Pictures Classics out of Cannes.
Great fit.
Sure. And it was France's submission for the Oscars this year, somewhat controversially,
right.
Anatomy of a Fall did end up being an Oscar winner, ultimately, but like this is probably the move, right? Because I mean, I feel like
French movie.
The Anatomy of a Fall is like too much an English discourse would probably have been a problem for like the international feature. It might have hurt that film overall, actually. But who knows whether that was a mistake on their part or not. But I feel like they slow rolled it out a little bit. Like it was not they did like a classic like qualifying release and then actually put it in theaters a little bit later, which is I feel like it's a classic Sony Picture Classic sort of play. I think it did all right. It probably found the folks who was gonna find it. Certainly they had plenty of great food shots to showcase in a trailer to get people interested. But yes, it's set in 1889 in France. Benoche plays Eugenie, who is a cook, and she works for Dodin, who they have like a weird relationship,
Magimel.
Right? Yeah, Magimel plays that character.
Yeah, he's in love with her.
And yes,
he sort of keeps him at bay a little bit.
Right. He's like constantly asking her to marry him. And she's constantly turning him down.
Because she's like, we've got this thing, like...
She's like, it's working, right? Like,
yeah, like, we don't need these labels.
Sure. But yeah, she is his cook, and, like, he throws these, like, lavish, like, multi-course dinner parties for all his friends. His lifestyle is basically just throwing dinner parties, right? Like, it doesn't seem like he... does much else.
Sure, I mean he's in the kitchen, he's helping,
he's... right, he does help but it's very she's very much like she doesn't like sit down with them really, like they...
No, she's the head chef,
right? And so yeah, and you know, as time passes, she is becoming ill in some way. He keeps asking her to marry him, and she eventually concedes, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, he gives her this big dinner where he's, like, you know, all these courses and, like, describing everything to her, and finally, like, does the big ask and gives her the ring and the food, and they have their little ceremony.
Mm-hmm. And then she dies pretty shortly after that, I think.
Yeah, there's, like... a little bit of time, and then she is when she dies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the rest is like.
And then he is like, so well, lost and forlorn.
Sure. The other thread is that like, there was this young girl who they were taking on as apprentice potentially.
It was like a.
She's got the gift. Right. She can like, she understands the food or whatever.
Right. They'll give her, like, a spoon of something, and she'll, like, rattle off all the ingredients. And...
yeah, she can taste it. There was also, I'm trying to remember what food they give her. It's like the dessert at the end of the sort of first big cooking scene. And,
isn't it like a Baked Alaska? Because aren't they talking about...
yes, it's the Baked Alaska, right.
Because it's like...
the Baked Alaska
is crazy. There's like the hot new thing is a Baked Alaska. Because that's when it's when they, near right, when...
it's like both hot and cold. Yeah.
But
that's it, right. And that's sort of the end. It's just like him, like, maybe is he going to get over it or not? And, like, he maybe sort of starts to take some steps towards getting over her at the very end, if I'm remembering correctly. That's what I feel like I'm the most fun of.
Yeah, I mean, he...
he apprentices the young girl.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He tries to, you know, fill that void in his life of teaching a new person the beauty of cooking. And they go out and find people. Because, you know, no... he struggles because nobody seems to be as good as her. But, you know, at the end, he seems somewhat accepting of moving on.
That's right. He has, like, the parade of replacements who, like, all get, like, let go pretty quickly.
Yeah. There's also, there's, like, this prince that's coming, and he's planning this big, lavish dinner for him, and then this is eventually they do...
right, he's got like a fancy chef.
They plan to do the pot au feu, and it's like they reduce it down, right? They had this huge listed menu. Sounded so good. And then they're like, no, 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 no. But the other thing is there's that great scene at the end where it sort of like spins around like this empty kitchen after they like all go on this walk, and they're like... you know, it's like his one of his buddies and the apprentice, and then it's just like him and Benoist having this conversation where she's like, "Am I your cook or your wife?" And he's like, "My cook." Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Did you both enjoy this movie?
I liked it. I was a little bit like, there were people who were like, this is the movie of the year. Like, I love it. So like, and I was a little bit baffled by that. I found especially, the post her death, him sort of like wallowing in sadness portion to be a little bit trying. And like, it was just like, I was like, we should find another gear in this. And it was taking too long to do that. I mean, I liked the, like, process stuff of them, like, cooking and, like, seeing all the, like, the old-timey kitchen stuff and, like, them, all that sort of stuff was very cool and fun. The actual, story itself was not necessarily something I was quite as excited by, but I thought it was, like, mostly fine.
Amelia?
I mean, I've spoken on this, like, when we talked about it at Cannes,
sure. I you haven't seen it in a minute.
I really like it. I think it's really, I basically think it's really good. I talked about my experience at Cannes where it was like, I think when we did the lineup announcement that year,
everyone was like, what is this?
There was some, what is this? And I think we did some predictions at one point, and I was like, I think that movie's gonna be good. Just like based on nothing, just based on like, Juliette Binoche is in it with Benoit Magimel, and they're like cooking or whatever. I just like, it's probably good. This seems like it has a high floor. And then I remember being at the press screening, sitting there watching it, and it was like one of the more interesting experiences I've had in a theater of just like everybody, well, most people, some people after like the 10th straight minute of cooking, there were some people that left, but most everybody else there was like, oh, this movie's good. Just like everybody realizing at the same time, just like, and as it keep going, people kept being like, oh, like it's just like a movie that is sort of brave enough to start with like 15 minutes of straight cooking. Like, this is what the movie is about. Like, we don't feel a need to over explain the dynamics at play. We don't need like, oh, we need plot here. It's just like, the point of the movie is the cooking, and that's sort of like the fundamental thing to the relationship also. So we're just gonna show you the cooking, and we're gonna, even if it's a little like almost fetishy, it is, I think it I don't think it's indulgence for indulgence sake, as you know, as the movie makes its point towards the middle of sort of explaining the differences between just being indulgent and all, but and like having an actual balance to your life and the sort of actual craft of putting together that sort of meal. So I really liked it. I was like really taken with it. I really like Magic Mel. I really like Benoche, but Benoche is like the greatest ever do it. So that's like no surprise. And I found it I found it kind of moving.
She really is like a steady hand. There's like never a doubt when she's on screen, I think, in anything, basically. Especially now. And or like maybe not that every project now she picks is good, but like now and I think her age and confidence, you know, I feel like she's the genuine article, as they say. I thought it was very, I loved watching it, you know. It does look very good, I think. Very, like, dewy and, like, sunny and glowy. There's a lot of natural light pouring in through these open, you know, farm-style windows or whatever. These French country cottages with these awesome kitchens. But it is, like, feather light, you know. And it, you watch it and it is, like, so sort of not zippy, but just like you're the opening scene especially, I was like,
right, the pleasures are, it's largely a little not
TikTok-y, like, I don't want to be derogatory, but it is just like, you know, let me film a commercial for your restaurant type beat, sure. Where it's like when zooming you're into your the family, food and like pulling back and like very and it is very like fluid in its motion, you know, which I appreciate, but I also, as the movie went on, I found it sweet, and I found, you know, their chemistry good. I wasn't like completely sold, or not sold, but just like on board with this, like the sort of grand romance of it, maybe, where everything sort of just feels like it happens rather than like I didn't feel as much like passion as I had anticipated, and I'm still not, I guess, entirely sure why. I think it is just like a little fizzy. It's a little like it's really, really what I keep thinking is that it's just really light, but I do enjoy it. I had a great time watching it, and like could easily, I love, there's so many little things of like how loving it is about the process and the craft that is like undeniable, and I do like that is where I think the sort of passion is on the screen the most. Like there's that great scene, I forget exactly what it's called, but they're eating those little birds where you can only eat it in like such a way that you have to cover your head with a towel, and they're all like at the table with the napkins on the head, and you just hear like like them eating sloppy birds. It's so cool. I would love to do that. That's the thing, is like people talk about the food looking gross sometimes, and I'm like, I want to try everything. It's just like the wise man, let me try the brains, I'll do it all. What do I gotta lose?
You want to eat the bones?
You can eat if you can eat bones, you can eat bones. Like,
but you want to eat the bones? Like, why not eat the? Why not eat the bones?
Like bones pets. Can be good sometimes. There's some taste of bones. Bones can have some flavor. I kind of get it.
I mean, bone broth, sure, but
we'll get we'll get to some crazy bone stuff later.
Whoa,
with the other
crazy bone. He's going by.
I guess I sort of get that perspective. I think I instead of rewatching the movie, because I really couldn't before we got to this.
Yeah,
I wrote a review for it when I saw it at Cannes, that came out in a review online. So I sort of reread my review to sort of refresh myself on my own feelings on the movie. And in it, I do get to the sort of like I do think the movie is sort of making a case for its own style within it in a way that I think sometimes with other movies doing that I can find annoying, but with this one I found mostly charming, where it's like, it is true that it sort of puts more love and care and more, like, there's more exciting attention to, like, the cooking than there is sort of there when those two are together, like, not cooking, just, like, being romantic with each other in that way. But I think that what the movie is doing is being like, yeah, that's their relationship is the cooking. It's like, yeah, that's why they love each other. It's just like, this isn't just like food porn or whatever. It is like the amount of effort you see these people putting into is the greatest reflection of who they are as people, more than anything they could really ever say to each other. And I think that is sort of what the movie is navigating within, and just like how empty he feels in the back half, I feel like also gets to that. And so it's like, I guess that sort of, when I sort of realized that sort of carried me through the entire relationship, and why I found it so affecting, of just like, these people are just such pure craft people that a sort of like a sort of respect for the craft is also how they express love for each other, and how, why they are so similar. And like, I feel like I get why losing somebody that seems so simpatico and has this such a beautiful gift in your life, I feel like that tragedy of that played to me.
Sure. That, I all, like, I got all that from it. It's just, like, I don't know. There's something about it where I'm just, like, not a disconnect, but, because there's, you know, there's the great scene where they match cut from, like, the stewed pear to, you know, Juliette Binoche from behind, and it's just, like, that's, I think underlines similarly what you're saying of like, the food is the relationship, they're tied to it intrinsically, but it's also just like, you know, a little bit missing something. I don't know. I maybe it's like an expectation thing where I was sort of expecting to be like, I had been anticipating it maybe too highly, but we'll see.
Sure, and I don't know. I feel like everything in the movie sort of works so in concert to me that I was sort of able to get swept up in all of it, to where it just like, yeah, whenever, if I was excited about like how beautiful like the baked Alaska looks, or how beautiful the pears were sliced, I sort of was able to completely transfer that in my mind to being like, oh yeah, this is what, that's kind of sort of the purest expression of love, and like what people are here on this planet to do is just like make beautiful things for each other and really put themselves out there. You know, it's a sort of an expression of vulnerability even, because, you know, they're both, they're very critical people, and to be able to, you know, make something for somebody who, you know, has very high standards, but you're willing to put yourself out there for somebody like that, even if they might have some thoughts on it. I feel like that's like a very vulnerable, intimate thing that I feel like very few movies get at, especially like, obviously there is some sensuality in it, there is some sexuality, but that is usually more of the realm in which people, you know, sort of vulnerabilities and intimacy are depicted in movies. So a movie that is able to get at it through other means like it does in this, I sort of appreciate on that level. But I can see finding it fizzy. I do think it's a little fizzy, but I guess I appreciate the fizziness more than find it frustrating. Looks great. I guess I don't know who shot it. I assume it's sort of whoever Fran An Hung's guy is, but he does a great job. You know, at the beginning feast scene where, you know, you have all the steam's bubbling and all the rich crackling, like
Jonathan Rickenborg.
I guess that's just some French person.
Yes, I've never heard of any of these other movies, I don't think.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I think it's well worth watching.
Absolutely.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah,
there's plenty, like, yeah, there's plenty of joy to be found in it. Yeah, I just, yeah, I think, I don't know, I either want it, like, more insight into the, like, the actual, like, relationship and who they are away from the cooking process and the relationship, or less of it. Like, it didn't quite feel like the right balance to me. I perhaps would have enjoyed it more if it was just the food and you didn't know anything about their real relationship, or I don't know, maybe. I don't know, but definitely worth seeing for sure.
Yeah, and even outside of their relationship, I think just Matt Jamel just talking to all his patrons, I think that stuff is very,
yeah,
cool and charming. Whenever he has to like present all the food to all the people, and he has to like have hard opinions on like this is what a meal should be and this is what it shouldn't be, and this is like, you know, that's the respect. Like, he's called, people call him the Napoleon of fine dining because he's such a, like,
a hard ass about it,
but it's because he's passionate about it, you know? That's, sometimes hard assery can be an expression of like, caring, you know?
Yeah.
But then how not hard ass he is with her is, it's very nice.
Do you want to pivot to Babette's Feast a bit?
Yeah,
we're already talking about similar themes.
Yeah, it's almost like we picked these two movies deliberately.
You know, can I talk a little bit about my... this wasn't on mic, but I was talking about watching a movie wrong. And the first 20 minutes of this movie, you know, I'm like... Not a lot of Babette, no cooking really. Did I like completely whiff? But then in my head, I'm like, they won't call this movie Babette's Feast unless it's truly going to be epic. And I started getting so giddy about thinking, like, good God, they're like putting off this feast. We already know it's coming. This is going to be so good. And it was like, already I was wrapped up in the movie. They're like singing opera to each other and like, falling in love. I was just like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. We haven't even got to the feast yet. But yes, Babette's Feast. 1987?
1987.
Big year. I was looking because I was like, what else was that year? And it ends up being a pretty big one in terms of movies that I love a lot. Moonstruck is also that year. One of my goats.
Sure.
Opera, we've talked about on the show. Ishtar. James Ivory's Maurice. Broadcast News. Oh. Witches of Eastwick.
That's great.
Blood Rage. Huge year. But Gabriel Axel. Babette's Feast.
Yes.
Had either of you... Neither of you had seen this before.
That's
right?
Correct.
That is correct. Yes, for me also.
Did you have any idea of it? I sort of only knew it as like, there's like, this is a food movie.
I had a vague idea of what it was about.
Yeah,
I sort of knew that it was a movie that was building up to a feast, not a movie that had a lot of cooking.
Yeah, throughout. I didn't know anything in particular. How much Babette, how much feasting we should expect. I had no expectations either way.
What did you both think?
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love the feast as much as the build up to the feast, but I did like the people's reactions to the feast, how they like refused to talk about the food.
Sure. Should we do? Funny. I guess set up lightly. It's like
it's two sisters in like Denmark.
Very small, Scandinavia, like Danish town. Yeah, off this fjord.
Yeah. And it seems pretty miserable there. It's,
well, they live simple lives, Andy.
Sure, right. That's the thing, right? That's sort of the whole setup is like, yeah, these meet them as like older ladies, and like they have this maid, you know, Babette, and it's like, how do these two old ladies who are just doing charity work all the time afford a maid? Well, let me tell you. And like the narrator's like, it's not this tone, but that's but it's sort of like, it's like a fable or like a fairy tale sort of thing. But you flash back to them as young women. Their father,
great dissolve too, where it's like, here's the old ladies, and then we just,
yes, and it's pretty good.
The young ladies onto
them, pretty good,
so you know,
pretty good
which
matches for the younger versions. I guess I usually have an easier time when it's all actors I'm not familiar with. And I'm like, sure, these are all the same as younger, but their father's the priest, and then one of them has like sort of a brief relationship situation with, he's a captain at that point, who is like sent to this remote village as like a punishment, and he's there for a little while, but then gets out of there after a few months, but like sort of establishes this relationship with one of the sisters. And then an opera singer comes to town, and he establishes a relationship with the other sister,
hears her singing,
he discovers
her talent.
Yes, and offers to give her lessons for free, and is like, oh my god, you're gonna be so huge, like people are gonna come from all over just to hear your voice, you're gonna be so fucking talented, like we're gonna be singing together forever. And then she tells her father, like, I'm done, I don't want any more of this, after he is, the singer is like a little too intimate during one of their rehearsals. He's like, you know, he's going full like opera passion act out, and she is ambivalent about that at best, I would say, and so she cuts him off. But then his maid slash chef has to flee Paris.
That's an interesting read of that scene, but continue.
Yeah, I was about to say,
all right, we can talk about it, sure.
I thought they were falling in love and that she decided to stay because of her piety, Andy. She can't take on this lavish lifestyle and maintain her faith, you know?
Oh,
that's the whole movie.
I guess. I don't know.
I'm kind of in between. I'm more like, she was just like, she had no concept of even what, like,
sure,
what was happening. It was like, they were also taken aback because they're not used to that, a sort of grand display of emotion, as we can get in
as an opera singer.
Yeah. But then anyway, so his Babette, his chef slash like maid slash, you know, help, she needs to be sent away from Paris because of a civil war, and so he sends her there, and they're like, we can't pay you. But she's like, that's fine, I'll just live and work or whatever. And then they cut back forward in time sort of at this point. Well, first you see them like teach her how to make like the bread and ale soup and like the shitty food they're eating currently.
They make ale and bread soup.
Yeah.
Which, would you try?
I'm sure there's a good version of that.
They were just like,
they're
soaking bread in water, passing it through a tamis, a sieve,
right,
and then
adding some ale, cooking it, like, for an hour.
It's sort of just boiling this bready thick porridge.
But yeah, like no spice, no, like they're not like, there's no onion in there, there's like nothing.
No, nice. It seems a little intense, I'll say.
But so she,
and this is like 40-ish minutes in, and it's our first meal, maybe 30-ish,
something like that.
Just
it does, it zips along. It's a pretty fast moving movie.
No, I mean,
but yeah. And then you sort of cut ahead and you see that Babette is like, they're like, we're making more money than ever, like with Babette here. And like, she's like, she has like taken sort of their like meager sort of like what is available to them and like spruced it up, and like is like, they're going around giving food to all these people all over the village and stuff, and everyone's all happy. And then Babette's wins the lottery. She wins 10,000 francs.
Yes, which they set this up earlier where she's like, her husband and her child were like killed in France, and like the only thing she's like, I've only got this lottery ticket or whatever. My friend renews it annually,
right?
And then she gets a letter, and she's like, oh my god, I won the lottery, and I was cracking up. This movie, I think, is very funny. Has a great sense of humor. And this is, like, one of the first scenes where I was, like, cackling. Where it's just, like, I won the lottery, and I was not expecting it at all.
Yeah. And so she says it's the anniversary of their father's death or his birthday or something. They're marking something with their late father, pastor father.
100 years, yeah. I think? Is it?
And so Babette's, like, please, please, please let me, like, make a full, like, fine dining French dinner for you. And they're like,
She's like, I want to make the dinner.
Right. And they're like, I don't know, that sounds, like, extravagant, and, like, we're, like, really pious or whatever. And then she's like, please, this is, like, I've never asked you for anything in my life. Like, please let me cook this.
I've worked for you for 14 years, and I've never asked for anything. And they're like, okay. Right.
And so then,
because she wants to pay for it. She's like, let me pay for the dinner.
Yeah, and they're like, okay. And so then, and then she asks for, like, a week off. And so there's, like, a week where they're back to the bread nail soup and stuff, and everyone's real bummed about it. And then Babette arrives back off of a boat with, like, 5 million, like, birds and shit. Like,
she's got a bunch of quail. She's got a big
turtle. She's got a big block of ice. She's got all sorts of, you know, alcohol and
stuff. Spices and wines. Yeah.
And they all transport it back up. And the sisters at this point are, like, have a meeting with their neighbors who are coming and are like, guys, this is a little out of control. We don't know how to tell her to not do it. And, like, we can't stop this. So, like, everyone promised just to, like, not say anything about the food. Like, we cannot.
This is another very funny scene, I think, where they're, like, stressed about what this French dinner is going to be. And then everyone sort of agreeing that they're not going to say anything. And, like, all this sort of cuts to these individual people just all being like, and of course we won't do this, and then
they keep breaking so out into, like, Jerusalem is our, like, whatever, like, all the time singing. They're always singing hymns, and then
she has the crazy dream where she sees the turtle in the kitchen, like, waddling.
That's
on, like,
right she's got a giant ass turtle that she's sort of hauled in and is, like, moaning, like, it's, like, making weird noises.
Well, it's probably, you know, it's dying. It's out of water. Yeah. It's dying. Yeah. He's making turtle soup on soon. And then she has this crazy dream about, like, Babette trying to poison them. Yeah. And, like,
and then at the same time, the captain has become a general, and he's going to come back and join them for this dinner. And you see a scene where he is like,
well, so when he gets it there originally, it was like a nearby his, like, old aunt lives there. And he was with her, and then she was a guest at the dinner and brought along him.
Yes. And so he's going to be there. You see him, and he's like, am I going to, like, I have a lot of regrets. And, like, let's see whether it's, like, the case that I should continue to have these regrets based on how this dinner goes.
Because there's his love.
Yes. His lost and love. It's that great scene where he, like, talks to his younger self.
Younger self. Yes. Very cool. This guy, the older general. Jarl Kuhl, so good.
He's good. Well, yeah, because he's a very important narrative presence. Figure. He, like, really is, like, on a screenplay structural level, it's, like, very important that he's there, because he is the whole time the one who, like, knows what is going on in terms of this dinner and is able to say, like, this is very impressive the whole time, like, as everyone else. So they have this dinner. She's, like, she's cooking all day. Like, you see these, she's 5 million. She's got her nephew there. She's like, he's like plucking quails. She's like cutting dough. She's like got 5 million things happening in this little teeny tiny kitchen. And is like really going all out. And she starts to serve this meal. And yeah. And so the general is there the whole time, and he is there to sort of really underline, like, this is an incredibly accomplished and impressive meal.
It's like, you know, you've got it set up that everyone agreed they're not going to
say anything. And in fact, anytime.
And then it's like this one interloper or whatever who's like the guy who didn't get the memo. And he's just like, my God, this wine. Right. Like, sip one. He's like, this is so good.
Right, and he keeps, like, trying to talk to them about it, and they keep talking about, like, I don't think it's going to snow this year. Like, they keep, like, changing the subject whenever he tries to talk to them about the food.
Because then the first course is turtle soup. I want to go down. Would you try the turtle soup?
No.
Both of you, either of you.
I don't think there's anything.
I've never eaten turtle.
I try it. I don't. It does not sound appetizing.
It looked like it had some little potatoes in it, or maybe little dumplings or something.
Maybe
it was. I mean, right? What?
That's classic.
Was it? Is it just turtle broth, or is there like turtle meat in it? Like,
I don't know. Would you not? What's the difference? I guess you would not want to eat.
I mean, well, I would be wary of either. I guess, but I might be a little more if there was. If it was just broth, I don't know, but
I would try it for sure.
Try anything.
Well, yeah, but then they got the blinis with caviar, sour cream, some diced shallot, looking really, really good. Served with the Veuve Clicquot, the champagne. Sure. Oh my God!
No thanks on caviar.
There's that some one, great that, caviar
that,
in
that one is the one that seems the most good to me.
Sure. There's the whatever the white is, the sour cream, the white stuff look good. That look good.
Yeah. Blini's Dimadoff, I think they called it.
Yeah.
I didn't go back to taste of things, but there is a lot of great food in it, obviously. Yeah. The fish stock with the dumplings, the quenelles of pike or whatever it was, looked really good. The poached fish in the milk broth, you know.
Yeah.
There was also a great caviar. And the big meal that he made for Benoche, there's a lot of good stuff. But yeah, then it's the Kaiun sarcophagus or whatever.
Right, the thing
in the puff pastry.
Sticking out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the crazy biting of bones.
Yeah.
Yes, no, that you.
When he
you wouldn't try
head.
The bird head?
I don't want to eat
the delicate bones and slurp the brain.
No, thank you.
You
that,
shrimp
that one's
no.
a little crazy.
I don't eat seafood.
I eat the rest of.
Oh, you don't eat seafood, of course. But that's also got the great bit where he tilts the bowl so he can eat the sauce, and everyone's like, oh, and like starts
that's
doing
right they
it
keep like, getting like hints of like, how am I supposed to eat this, like, from him?
Yeah, like the guy grabs the fig and like takes a big bite out of it, and then like the general slices it perfectly and like scoops off a bit of the flesh.
Right.
Is good. Yeah, there's
is the fruit platter next. Is that what's after the
well I think it's like cheese and then the cake that she makes with like the like fondant roses or whatever and like all the fruit on it, and then it's the big tropical fruit tray.
Which I can only imagine, if you've never had a grape or a pineapple before, like, that would, like, fucking blow
fucking
your mind.
Mind-blowing. there's also, I mean, it's just, like, the French general knows how good it all is, and everyone else is sort of, you know, obviously impressed.
And they're like increasingly drunk as the evening goes on too, so they
they keep drinking
up.
But that's the other thing, is like, he's like, oh, can I please have some more of that wine, and she's like, leave the bottle, and the kid like sets it down and the guy's like, whoa. But the as the people get like more and more drunk and like enjoy the food more, there's a great moment at the end where they're all like circling around the fountain.
Right, they all go
outside
and
like
and start
singing to
him,
the stars.
Right, yeah.
When they're all drunk.
Right.
But the, and then, you know, the general gives his big speech.
And you find out that Babette, like, worked at, like, a fancy
French
restaurant.
He talks about when they're eating the quail, he's like, the only time I've ever had this was at, like, Café Anglaise, this insane French restaurant, like, where the chef was this woman, and it was like the best meal I've ever had. This is a signature dish that only she can make or whatever. And then, you know, as the movie ends, she's like, yeah, I was this great chef, but like, there's nothing for me there anymore. So I'm staying.
And you find out she has spent all of her lottery winnings on this dinner.
Sure.
And that like, that's like what it would cost for people to eat that at the cafe. And that's basically it, right? There's not like,
sure. I mean, there's the scene where the general and one of the sisters, he like, they have their moment together where he's like, you know, he says the thing where he's like, you have these choices. Everyone, like, misses these things. What does he say exactly when he's talking to her and they're, like, having their moment? It's very, that moment is very beautifully shot where it's, like, you see, like, her, like, very glowing under candlelight and him as well. But, like, you can see, like, her arm in his shot in a very stagey way that I was just like, whoa, this looks crazy. But it's just, like, this moment of, like, he's like, I have, like, thought of you every day. And, like, I will continue to do this. Like, have you, like, felt this? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
And then it's the sisters talking to Babette about, like, how good it was and, like, what she's going to do when she goes back to Barriss. And she's like, there's nothing for me there. And then she's like, there's the quote where she's like,
oh, but you're going to be a great poor, artist. Right. And then an artist is never poor. Yeah. Is sort of the thing. The thesis of the film, I guess.
Well, yeah. And then there's like, because there's the thing that the opera singer in the letter when he, like, sends Babette, he's, like, talking about not hearing the sister sing, and he's like, the angels will hear you sing, like, in heaven or whatever, and they'll, like, be so
right.
thrilled by your voice, and she says the same thing to her about, like, they'll love your cooking yeah. or whatever.
Amelia, what'd you think?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Looks nice. Mm-hmm. It kind of peaks at the opera scene to me. That's the I think.
Whoa!
That's the moment I like the most in the movie. Obviously, the feast at the end is nice. That's a very cool and interesting sort of dynamic for it to play out. But I do think them singing opera is sort of the scene that I think gets at the most interesting things at different times. And it's very, I found it very fun.
Yeah.
Because obviously, the movie to some extent is just, like, sort of, like, this thing about a relationship between sort of piety and indulgence and the moments of happiness yeah. you're willing to allow yourself in this life.
Right, well...
And I think that scene has an interesting dynamic to me because that's just, like... Because it's like, yeah, what I said earlier, where it's like, she doesn't even conceive of, like, wait, this guy is, like, into me and he's singing to me? Like, this is, like, very inappropriate. Like, even though we're singing, like, opera seems so outside of what she had ever been exposed to, either, like, musically and emotionally, that she just has no concept of it. And they're not willing to sort of allow themselves and embrace, you know, a sort of ecstatic emotion. And only through the feast at the end is when they're sort of fully, is when they're actually ever allow themselves to be like, you know what, we don't need bread soup every day and live these yeah. pious lives. There is some beauty in the world, even if we, like, can't fully indulge it all the time. And that's sort of what Babette's getting there at the end, where it's like, for most of it, you think, like, Babette is sort of doing these people a favor, where she's like, she's trying to get them to experience, you know, the pleasures of life as a gratitude for, you know, keeping her safe and letting her stay with them for such a long time. And then when you find out she spent all the money at the end, you're like, oh, this was also that for her. She was like, I'll never get to cook anything like that ever again in my life. So this is also giving me the pleasure, the highest pleasure I ever had in life for one last time, because that's sort of all I have to accomplish. You know, it's a movie about people willing to, you know, it's about people willing to be ecstatically happy and give themselves over to pleasure to some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the thing that's interesting to me is, like, there is a reason that, like, that they are sort of subsisting on, like, bread and ale soup and that sort of thing. And it's, like, that environment that they live in is so, like, harsh and challenging that it does not allow for those kinds of indulgences. on like any and on any sort of like a regular basis. So like, I don't know. Like, I wonder, like, she gives them this gift of like this incredible meal or whatever, but like they'll never be able to experience anything like that again. And like, it is interesting to me that like, well, like, is it better to like have it once and then never again, and then like have the memory of it and like know you'll never reach that peak ever again? Or like, do you try to, like, the stuff that she does where she is like doing like little improvements on the things that they do have, where she's like, give me some onions and some bacon or whatever, and like I'll fix this up and like make it like what you have better, like, is that like more like that gift to the people as a like a longer, more sustained thing versus like the one time like magical event that they'll talk about and remember forever, was like an interesting thing for me to think about and consider. You know, given that like where and when this takes place makes this sort of thing inaccessible to them, except for this extremely unusual circumstance where they have taken in this person and who has won the lottery.
I mean, yeah, to a certain extent, but it's like, I feel like that's sort of the point of both of the suitors, is them being like, well, these people could have gotten whisked away and taken to a situation where these things could have been more regular, but they just didn't, because they couldn't even, like, really conceive of a world where that sort of thing is allowed. It's sort of like, they're sort of used to what they're used to.
Yeah. The opera scene, I do agree that it's more like a, like, she can't, like, even process what's happening. That it's just like she's feeling things that she, you know, the emotion of singing the opera and everything, just like new feelings.
Yeah, and it's like, and then the, you know, you're dealing with some level of religiosity, so it's like,
sure,
when your default like state is like shame expressions of emotion, it sort of can be difficult to understand like somebody being frankly sort of lusting.
Sure. But then also that religious is what gives them like such like a strong morality, where they are so helpful to the people around them and like are able to,
well, yeah,
you know.
But the lesson of the movie is that you can have both, that you can do both and be happy. That's like the whole thing of the dinner, I think, is like you're allowed to have these things.
Sure. It's a rejection of Puritanism. Interesting.
What has Puritanism ever got us?
I mean, it's a good question. It got us America, certainly.
And we love that. The message of Can I Kick It?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was completely wrapped up in it.
Yeah, and I think sort of, well, it's interesting because when you think of sort of Babette, it's like, obviously, it's like when what she lost was sort of due to the French Revolution. And I guess there is a level to which you realize that, you know, she may be, you know, obviously, like, those sorts of revolutions and movements existed against a sort of overindulgence by certain people.
Right.
So there is a sort of reason why that is not a thing in her life anymore. So that is a sort of thing you can think about.
Did either of you read the short story?
No.
No. I didn't know
it was It's very, story. Very short. It's like a 20-page PDF. It's very short.
Did you?
But I did, yes. It does get more into, like, at the end, when they're having this conversation about, like, her and the sisters of, like, will she go back to Paris? She's, like, listing the names of a bunch of, like, generals and people that she served at the restaurant, that she's, like, these are the people that, like, killed my family, and, like, these are the reasons I cannot go back. And, like, it gets into that a little bit more. Great supplement to the film.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also because it's interesting. I think what I find interesting about the opera is because, like, yeah, like Andy said, like, you can certainly make an argument of just, like, well, with the food element of it, where it's just like, yeah, of course they can't have a 7-course meal every night, or that's not a thing that is regularly available to them. But it's like, she could sing whenever she wants to. That's not a thing that is denied to her by the circumstances other than like a sort of conservative upbringing. It's truly the only thing denying her of the like the pleasures of ecstatic emotional singing and opera and that kind of thing, and just like the weird balance of that. Also, I think that guy's really funny.
His energy's very funny because he comes out and he's like,
"I prefer to be alone" or whatever, and then like he's like, "Oh my god, I've never felt love like this." Like,
yeah, I do. At first, I was just like, "It's funny that this movie is like about these people who keep coming to this island and falling in love with these hot sisters or whatever."
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the younger sisters looks just like Jodie Comer, and I found it very distracting.
And one of the older sisters looks exactly like Allison Janney.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but I mean, that's obviously like the sort of comedy that the movie's playing in a little, or I mean, both the comedy and the theme of the movie, where it's just like, he is such like a like bon vivant, like, in a town full of people who are decidedly not that.
He's got his top hat and, you know, coat and tails on or whatever, sitting by the
Yeah, and he's French.
Is he the one? He's also, right, because he's also Catholic, right? Because the dad asks him, like, you're a papist, right? And he's like, yeah, I, you know. interesting. Yeah, given a lot of that going around lately with, Shogun having that be sort of a big plot point as well. Who's Catholic and who's Protestant?
Yeah. Are you sure?
But yeah, I think it's just like
a perfect little short story of a movie as well.
Sure.
Where it is just like, here's this thing, here's this thing. That's why Babette's here. Now Babette's here, and here's the feast, and now the movie's over.
Like, yeah, it is sort of bing, bang, boom. It's like Babette's always wearing this giant hood. She's like got this like giant cloak and like wears like it. She looks like she's like playing like the witch in Into the Woods or something. Like it's like very dramatic. But yeah, because she is like such to the background for so much of it until she sort of comes to center stage with like this her request and then her process of preparing this meal. And yeah, there's all these shots of her just like, you know, working in that kitchen and like getting stuff ready and, you know,
slicing the black truffle.
Yeah, and like the way that she looks, like her in work mode, like how determined she is, and like you she's not like externally showing like that she's getting a ton of pleasure out of it. And she's also like, she doesn't come into the room when they're eating at all, like at all, really. No. Right? So she,
same as Benoist, but
yeah, crazy for me is like, you just have to trust that like it's going over well. And, like, that as an act of service is like such an interesting, like, you know, all my artistic expression in my life has always been like, and now you can clap for me, please, like, sort of stuff. And yeah, the more behind the scenes, like, personal self-satisfaction of knowing you did a good job and like not witnessing the pleasure you're bringing is like such an interesting artistic temperament for me.
Yeah. But it's also like in both of the movies, it kind of has like the opposite is also very interesting, where it's like Majumel and the general both have to like explain to the other people why food is good and interesting, which is sort of an interesting dynamic that I guess was more reflective of like sort of being exposed to new things at that time versus now, where it's like the idea of having somebody sit with you the whole time during a meal and be like, well, actually, this is this, and this is why this is interesting, and this is why we need to cook. It sort of seems like if that happened to me, I'd be a little like, okay, come, like let me just eat the food. But it is interesting that act of sort of like emceeing back then, where it's just like, this is a full service. Like, you know, we are providing an experience here, and it sort of needs to be introduced because it is so dynamic and interesting.
You still have that with fine dining, where it's like, even in like the Wiseman doc, you like every time they're like, oh, we have this and it's blah 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 blah, like in a
all front the of, preparation. Yeah, the
front of house, back of house, like, divide is, like, so.
Exactly.
They're different arts. But then, yeah, the ultimate, like, can I compliment the chef or whatever is, like, the ultimate, like.
Yeah, my compliments the chef.
Yeah.
Have you ever given compliments to a chef?
How about a tip instead of a compliment?
Cullen, have you ever asked to give compliments to the chef at a restaurant? Mm-mm. I feel like that's I feel like that's something you would want to do.
I've definitely been like, this is so good. Sure. Like, this is truly perfect.
Yeah. My compliments to the chef.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I go to a lot of small restaurants where sometimes that's the chef will walk around.
Right.
And I'll be like, how was the food? And I'll be like,
sure.
Great
yeah.
stuff. I mean,
in that case, yeah, I'll be like, very good.
Right. This is the thing. Is I always just say everything's great. Like, I don't know how much my internal, like, feeling of, like, how good is this actually is ever properly communicated to people, because I always just want to be polite and say that everything's great.
You never been like, it's not very good, sorry.
I definitely have, like, not finished something and then, like, been like, I had to be asked by the server, like, oh, you didn't like this? And I was like, yeah, I didn't really like it or whatever. Like, that has happened.
Do you remember what it was?
I think it was, like, a tamale.
Do you remember why you didn't like it?
I don't remember. This was, like, I was in, like, college. It was.
Are you a tamale fan generally?
I think I was maybe trying it for the first time and it was, like, not sure. working out.
Unexpected masa consistency.
Right. I was just like, I like Mexican food or whatever, and, like, that's, like, not
what you ate the corn husk.
I might have, quite frankly. it was a long time ago.
That's funny. You didn't like that? I saw you only ate the wrapper.
But yeah.
That was tinfoil.
Yeah, I mean, right. This I have not. I feel like my experiences with, like, fine dining are, like, pretty limited and, like, fairly recent. And, like, I am much more comfortable in, like, a diner or whatever. And where it's like, yeah, this is great. Like, you gave me the bacon. It tasted like bacon. Like, this is what I wanted. Yeah, I mean,
sure, you'd feel like if it was something completely new,
right?
You wouldn't know how to be like, I guess it's good.
Right. And, like, also, right. And I'm like, I get self-conscious about, like, asking, like, what is this ingredient? Like, I don't know what this is. Like, that sort of stuff. Like, I don't like to, like, seem like a dummy. Like, I don't like to seem like an ignorant fool. And so I then just stick to, like, what I know or whatever. And, like, I don't try new things. This is one of my, we're getting deep into Andy's problems and self-improvements that he needs to do. But, that's just how I go.
I'll call my friend Babette. She can cook you dinner. It'll only be 10,000 francs.
Right. That's the other. It's like a fancy dinner like this. I would feel like, I'd be like, oh, but there's, like, probably gonna be a lot of stuff I don't like, and then I'll feel rude because I won't like it. And he's worked so hard on this. Like.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had, like, a coursed meal or a tasting menu or anything.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, you can let them know, like, your preferences.
Sure. But I feel like that list would then, they would get be mad. Yeah, I'd be like, it's this.
Here's three quails and one cheeseburger. Want to try the quail, Andy?
I might try aspects of it. I wouldn't want to eat the head, I don't think.
Because what it has truffle and, like, pate inside.
Right, she, like, wraps up some stuff in it. And then, like, it's in, like, a pastry. I would probably,
she made the puff.
The pastry looked great. I would eat that for sure.
Sarcopage. I think it literally means, like, quail in his coffin or, like, sarcophagus. Sure. Like, that's why they serve it with the head or whatever. Turtle soup.
That's such a big turtle for that amount of soup. I was like,
well, yeah, but I mean, she made a lot of broth, probably.
Sure. Is there going to be just, like, leftover turtle? I guess they don't have, like, freezers.
Serve it out
they
of the
can't,
shell.
Like, the, she like. Had to bring in, she had to import ice for this.
But it's also like, ice. Do you think she was, like, at the turtle market picking out a specific size of turtle? You know, it's like,
they
you got the turtle.
The beach?
Yeah, you. No, I mean, like, she probably bought the turtle at a place where you buy food, but it's not, like, I don't think there's, like, that wide a range of size of turtles available there. I feel like she's just like, that's a turtle, that would look good, I'm gonna buy it.
That was a tortoise. That was a big turtle.
Yeah.
What's it like to, like, fish a turtle, too? Jeez. That seems, I guess it's a net situation, but, or is it raised? Is it a raised turtle?
A salad that we missed also, in between the quail and the rum sponge cake with figs and candy. Yeah, the candied cherries look really good, too. Served with champagne.
That's the other thing, is I don't drink, so I wouldn't drink any of the pairings. And it's like, well.
Yeah, but you can tell them that.
Sure. When she was like, water, like, three-fourths of the way through, I was like, they have not been drinking enough water. They're going to be getting too drunk. They should be having water with every drink. This is not the way you should do things.
No. They need to be getting sauced up.
Yeah. Off of champagne and, like, sweet dessert wines and... Apparently, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page now.
Yeah.
That Alexander Payne was going to do a remake.
Sure. That makes sense. Did it have casting?
No, it just said it was going to take place in Minnesota. Sure.
Cheese curds!
Yeah. Bevitt's Feast is Butterburger.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It seems like a fairly culturally specific story, I gotta say.
I mean, you could have a French chef from anywhere come in and...
Or you can have... Yeah, I guess you could have a French chef come to, like, small-town Minnesota or whatever. I was thinking it'd be, like, more of a...
I mean, it makes... That also, like, it's a very different type of cuisine from what they're used to. Like, that's sort of part of it. It's, like, it has to be...
I guess you could... I could
it has to be the chef introducing something new to the people.
Maybe. I don't know that he's the guy.
But, yeah, I also don't know that he's the guy for that specifically. He's the guy for About Schmidt.
Okay. He's, you should just make About Schmidt over and over again. What would Ndugu think of this feast?
Dear Ndugu. God. Jack had a birthday recently.
Uh-huh. He's still there. He's still kicking.
Still kicking, yeah. Hopefully, you know, Tony Erdman remake could be coming That's out right. soon.
Lena... Hope that script's coming along.
Lena, please. We need Tony Erdman remake.
We get Lena Dunham on the podcast and we just beg her to continue working on the Tony Erdman remake.
My promise to you all listening, you all on the Zoom right now, if we ever get Lena Dunham on, I will ask about the Tony Erdman remake and be like, what happened?
Sure. I mean...
Did you meet Jack?
I imagine it didn't get a green light is what happened. Boy, yeah. A Jack Nicholson, Lena Dunham lunch is something I would certainly love to be on the fly on the wall for.
I want to be making them dinner.
Sure. You want a Babette's Feast, Lena and Jack?
Yeah. Am I supposed to eat the head?
And on that note...
Are you done? He for sure is the general part where he'd be like...
Sure, yeah.
I love the head.
Yeah. This is great champagne.
I love that.
What great grapes these are.
With that, actually, let's do Jack Nicholson talking about every single piece of food.
Jack Nicholson special movies. Presentations.
Yeah. I want a chicken salad sandwich. Remember from Five E Pieces?
No, I've never seen it.
Yeah, I think two movies worth watching.
Sure. Make them a double feature. Taste of,
watch them in a
sure,
week.
Sure, yeah. Taste of Things is a little long. Taste of Things is a little long for that, I guess.
Yeah, it was kind of long. I forgot about that. But, you know, who gives a shit? The, yeah, special presentations. Anyone have any off top?
I can go. Sony, the Columbia Picture has been, is their 100th anniversary as a studio. And to celebrate, they have been re-releasing the Spider-Man films back into theaters. Sure. And so these past two Mondays, it's Spider Mondays, these past two Mondays, I have gone to my local Cinemark and seen Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 on the big screen. And let me tell you, those are two movies that give you a little bit of everything. You laugh, you cry, you cheer, you know, marvel at how things can be, how good movies can be.
You what?
You marvel at how the good movies can be. True believer. I don't know. I'm not into Stan Lee speak enough to make this riff work.
Excelsior.
Yes.
Excelsior. Hey, true believers.
Yeah. See Doctor Strange issue 29, page 35 for this reference or whatever. It's been great. Like, they've been nice, like, warm crowds for each of them. It's just been, like, really joyous to, like, go every Monday night and, like, see these films. They're going to continue on. Spider-Man 3 is coming this Monday as you're listening to this. And then they're doing the Garfields, which I'm curious to revisit on the big screen. And then the Hollins after that. We'll see how long I keep it up for. But I've seen the first two so far. And, boy, those are some movies that work great on the big screen.
Great Action Boys podcast runner where they'll do Stan Lee talking about being trapped in his house
as like as a victim of elder abuse.
Yeah, very funny.
Yeah,
Amelia. What have I done anything? You know what?
Read a book. Listen to some music.
You know what? I've been doing a little bit of a side gig at home, just on a laptop, and so I've needed something to, you know, have on in the background while I do it. And so I'm a season and a half. I'm halfway through season 2 of Girls 5 Eva.
Hey! Wow.
And that's pretty good.
It's very funny. Very funny show. BPE.
It's a great, a lot of the same creative team as Kimmy Schmidt.
Right.
And it has maybe the most earwormy theme song since Kimmy Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
where it just, I just sing it all the time. Just whenever I'm at work mm-hmm. or whenever I'm walking around, I'm just singing the theme song.
Because forever is too short.
Yep. It's a good show. Lots of funny stuff in it. You know, Sarah Bareilles, Renee Lee Goldberry, yep. Paula Bell. All great. The second season, I started watching it, and I was like, oh, yeah. Now the show is like actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a show that sort of takes its time to find the joke density I want from it. But once it gets there, it's very good. Lots of good stuff in it.
You know, I think
yeah.
you had told me that you were watching this, Emilio, so I started rewatching 30 Rock. And
sure,
they really like had it from second one. It's crazy. There is a great joke that I never noticed before. In I think it's the third episode, the one where Jack sets Liz up with a lesbian and she doesn't know it. Where Liz like falls down and makes the grape lady noise, and I never noticed, and she's like, oh, and like does it exactly. I'm just like, wow, they really were like plugged in back then.
Yeah.
They like get it wherever you can.
I mean, the thing about 30 Rock, like the first episodes are really good, but then when you get to the middle of it and it's sure. like every single second of it is funny, it does still sort of build up.
Also, and just like, it's one of those things, you know, like The Simpsons or whatever, where like you experience more culture and then you just get things more, where they're like, Tracy just walks up and says, what's the frequency, Kenneth? I'm like, okay, that's fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I'm not gonna say the only problem, but the biggest problem with Girls 5 Eva is like, what's this like? 9 episodes.
It's true. It's they need sitcom they need, season. We need
bullshit. Right. That's like nothing.
Minimum 13, probably like 18 is what it should be. I mean, obviously 22, 24 is the dream, but I understand people don't want to do that anymore. It's like, but
I get like dramas why we're getting less episodes, but this is a sitcom. We're getting 9 episode seasons. Yeah. What the hell?
It's really a shame.
But yeah, at one point somebody just said, has the lines, and I saw Anita Baker at the Trop, and I remember finding that very funny. It's a lot like that. I'd say, like, you know, obviously it's like a Tina Fey universe project, so it has sort of the 30 Rock sensibility, but I think it's like, if you like Kimmy Schmidt, it is very Kimmy Schmidt, specifically. Mm-hmm. If you can sort of draw a line through the humor, it is very like that.
What if I only like Great News?
Hey, that's a great one too.
I've never seen
Great News. I never checked out the Saved by the Bell reboot. That was also sort of in that style.
That was also like Faye Disciples. I mean, listen, we all watch Mr. Mayor, right?
That's also one I didn't really get into, which is on me.
But anyway, Cullen?
Yeah. The other day, I had the day off from work, and I was like, you know what? I sort of haven't had a chance to really lock in with the Criterion 24/7 constant live stream. And I was like, what I'm going to do is just watch whatever they give me. And I sort of found that it's not built for that. There's no there's nothing in between each movie. Right.
So it's not like full TCM experience.
No. And it needs that. I understand what they're trying to do, and that, like, you just turn it on and it's a movie. They do just need to make it a TV channel. We need a return. I want, like, they have all these supplements that they could just play in between, or like shorts or anything. Right. Just like a gap, right. A second to catch
a title card beyond that says, credits. Coming up. Up next.
Or, yeah, I mean, later. So you can go. There's a website that is like what's on Criterion now, that it's like their website, and it tells you what's playing and it tells you how long is left in it. So it's like you can time like hopping into something. It doesn't tell you what's coming on next, which isn't an issue, I think. But it started off, and I watched a short film called The Music of Regret by Laurie Simmons, who plays the mom in Tiny Furniture. And you see some Dunham thank yous.
Sure. She's like, right, her. She's like friends with Lena Dunham's mom or something, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. Or sorry. She plays the mom in Tiny Furniture, but she and it's like this, she's a, you know, visual artist known for like photographs or whatever of like certain objects, and not very familiar with her work, but this short was playing and I was like, I'm just gonna watch whatever. And it was like I woke up and this was on, and it was pretty good. It's like a little, you know, Ed Lockman shot it. There's like all these marionettes and Meryl Streep like running around like having these relationships with puppets and like objects. It's very, very interesting. Then I watched Murmurs, this Agnes Varda documentary about graffiti in LA and like who does all the like wall art in these murals, and it's very good. And then I went on a walk and I was gone for like 2 hours, basically, got back, and luckily they were playing a short film that was like 20 minutes long, and they just played it like 4 times. So I just missed that block, and because I was like, I can't.
They played the same short over and over again.
I think they like had a 2 hour block and played this like 20 minute short like 4 times.
That's crazy. Like
that. Because if you look at there's a Twitter account that tells you what's on Criterion. And I was like, what did I miss in between these two movies? And it was just one thing that was like 20 minutes long. And I'm like, they must have played it over and over again. And then they played Love in the Afternoon, the Eric Romare movie. Very, very good. Great movie. Chris Rock looms large over it. You know, you're just thinking about what he saw in it, what made him decide to make I Think I Love My Wife. And then it ends and I'm like, good God, I like can't just keep watching movies. I really need like to process this, like I need to sit with it. And luckily Topsy Turvy started right after that, and I was like, Topsy Turvy, I've seen it before, I can let it play, I'll like lock in after I've like processed, like had some water and like walked around a little bit, and then locked in on Topsy Turvy, which I think we should do an episode on maybe. Sure. It's really a masterpiece, and like you just thinking about the whole Lee sensibility of like, we have this entire troupe, like his whole like intense rehearsal process, but then it being about a theater troupe and like you know, the meta of it, of them like all being this committed to it, to where it just feels like a real world, like you are just in that world, and it's crazy.
Hey, it's a Lee year. We maybe should do some
More Lee stuff. Maybe revisit. But then they played The Player, and I was like, I'm not gonna watch The Player right now. Topsy Turvy was like 3 hours. It just ended. I can't watch The Player. I'll hop in on whatever's next. And then they played A Brighter Summer Day, and I was like, what the fuck are we doing? I can't, like, this is too heavy for me. And then after that, they played Gimme Shelter, and I was like, the day I decided to do it, they played like 4 movies I'd seen, and I was just like, I can't do this. And then instead locked in on Playoff Basketball. But I think it is a good resource. It is not meant for binging. They have yet to figure out the ideal turn on Criterion Channel and just let it play all day, because this is just like, you want to watch everything, and you also
have you,
you there's no breathe. You need the breathe.
Have you ever in your life had TCM regular access, Cullen?
Oh yeah, I had a big, there's a big TCM DVR era.
Sure.
But then there was like a lot of times where I would just like put it on and like not really watch it.
Right. Yeah.
But just like let it play and like look at the intro sometimes, like do a bunch of other stuff as it was just like noise. But definitely, they had this big, I don't remember which year it was, maybe 2016, where they had this big TCM Oscars thing. Maybe they do it every year.
They do it every, like, every Oscars month, I think.
This was just the year that I was, like, locked in, where they were, like, we're playing all these movies, and I recorded a bunch of them, and then, like, never got around to it.
Classic. All right.
Once you have it, why would you use it?
Oh, it'll be there forever.
You only want to use it when you
there's always have it. Time. We all have infinite time.
It's April 2024, Andy.
Yeah.
And it's almost over.
Anyway, that's our episode, I think. If you like the show, send us some money on Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/cannesi, C-A-N-N-E-S-I. It is always extremely appreciated.
Maybe we'll make you a big fancy dinner if you send us $10,000.
Yes, or whatever the equivalent of 10,000 francs is. Is the franc strong or weak right now? I don't know whether we want that in our...
Well, this is the franc in 1871.
That's
also
true.
We have to remember.
Do not just ship us a giant turtle. We won't know what to do with that, certainly.
Oh, we can take care of it, become friends. You go to the pool all the time, right?
I don't think a turtle can handle chlorinated water. I don't think that's the ideal environment for a turtle.
I thought you only swam in freshwater.
What?
No, we can move on.
With that, I'll release our audience.
Bye.
Bye.